In the midst of darkness, we bring light. In the midst of darkness, we bring hope. Welcome this Christmas Eve to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I just want everybody to know you're welcome on this Christmas Eve evening. You're welcome if this is your first time here, or if you're coming more times than you can possibly count. You are welcome here if you're here surrounded by family and friends. You're welcome here if you came alone. You're welcome here if your heart is joyful on this Christmas Eve night, or if your heart is full of pain and sorrow. You are welcome here if you really find it hard to sit still and be silent. And you're welcome if you just came to sit still and be silent. No matter who you are and who you love, no matter the state of your heart or your soul, you are welcome here this evening.
Good evening. Good evening. Our opening words are by Reverend Kendall Gibbons. One of the great things about Christmas is that it is a sturdy holiday. Christmas doesn't wimp out when times are hard. It comes anyway, even if there are hardly any presents, even when there isn't much food to make a feast with, even if you're sad, even if the world around you is at war, even if you are living in fear, in danger, and oppression, Christmas still comes. And when it comes, Christmas is subversive. Christmas, with its story of an unwed mother and a doubtful father, with its legend of a helpless baby born in a stable, who was worshipped by some of the wisest, richest men in the world, with its tale of the child pursued by the deadly wrath of kings, who escaped as a refugee to a foreign land far from home. Christmas, with its ancient, enduring summons of peace on earth, goodwill to all people everywhere. You can't stop a day like that with a little hardship or greed or injustice. It will show up anyway, shining the light of a midnight star into the darkest places of our collective lives. Do not underestimate the power of the manger and the hope that it holds. The Christmas song of the angels is not as innocent as it sounds. It has turned the world upside down before now. It still can. Please join me in singing Joy to the World, and please stand as you are able.
Sing, and let nature sing, and let
seated. I would now like to extend a special invitation to Mary and Joseph and the animals, if they would like to come forward. And as I read, we're going to see Mary appear and Joseph and all kinds of animals. In those days, a decree went out from Emperor Augustus that all the world should be registered. This was the first registration and was taken while Quirinius was governor of Syria. All went to their own towns to be registered. Joseph also went from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to the city of David called Bethlehem, because he was descended from the house and family of David. He went to be registered with Mary, to whom he was engaged and who was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for her to deliver her child. And she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in the bands of cloth and laid him in a manger, because there was no room and no place for them in the inn.
So join me in our responsive reading, "For So the Children Come" by Sophia Lyon-Boz. And so, for so the children come, and so they have been coming.
Always in the same way they come, born of the seed of man and woman.
No angels herald their beginnings, no prophets predict their future courses.
No wise men see a star to show their time of day that will save humankind.
Yet each night a child is born is a holy night.
Fathers and mothers, sitting beside their children's cribs, feel glory in the sight of a new life beginning.
They ask, where and how will this new life end, or will it ever end?
Each night a child is born is a holy night, a time for singing, a time for wondering, a time for worshiping.
You may stay seated and we will sing "Away in the Manger."
Among us this evening, and I'm wondering if they would like to come forward now. And I'm going to continue on with the Gospel according to Luke. And there were in the same country shepherds, abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said to them, "Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find a babe wrapped in swaddling clothes and lying in a manger." And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men."
By Lynn Unger. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, "Fear not." Which is maybe a silly thing for a creature made of wings and eyes to say to a couple of schmoes who were just hanging out with their sheep until the heavens cracked open. Who wouldn't be afraid? And who stops being afraid because someone tells you to? And yet, fear not is the thing the angels say, apparently. An angel says it to Mary and to Joseph. Fear not. As if that would undo the panic of the moment, let alone all the hardship to come. The story never says if Mary or Joseph or the shepherds were comforted by these fear-denying angels. Likely not. But all of them moved forward, did the next thing that was to be done, which is about all you can ask. And maybe when the word came from Herod about smiting babies and they had to run, maybe when all the terrors of daily life descend, it could be good to have the angelic voices whispering, "Fear not," all down the long road and reminding you about the tidings of great joy. We can rise and sing, "Angels We Have Heard on High."
Angels we have heard on high, sweetly singing o'er the plains, and the mountains in reply, echoing their joyous strains. Oh,
And we will now be continuing with the Gospel according to Luke. When the angels had left them and gone into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, "Let's go to Bethlehem and see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has told us about." So they hurried off and found Mary and Joseph and the baby who were lying in the manger. When they had seen him, they spread the word concerning what had been told to them about this child. And all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds said to them. But Mary treasured up all these things and pondered them in her heart. The shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things they had heard and seen, which were just as they had been told. We will now sing, "Go Tell It on the Mountain," and you are welcome to rise again as you are willing and able. Some very wise people among us this evening. Will the wise people please come forward and join all the folks around the baby Jesus? And Mary had to go to the bathroom, but she will be back shortly. And this is from the Gospel according to Matthew. They were humans too, right? So. Exactly. So after Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." The star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And I want to thank all the children for participating in our pageant this evening. you can all return to your seats now. Thank you. And welcome back, Mary, and we're so glad you're safe and sound.
Our story this morning is The Stone by Diane Hoffmeyer. The Stone. In the year 1271, Marco Polo journeyed from Venice across the Mediterranean, through Arabia and Persia, over the Great Salt Desert, across the highest mountains in the world, and onto China and the magnificent court of Kublai Khan, ruler of the mighty Mongol Empire. When he passed through the town of Sevilla in Persia, he came across three strange, ornate tombs with domed roofs. The people of Sevilla told Marco Polo that the names of the three men buried in the tombs were Balthasar, Melchor, and Jasper. And this is the story they went on to relate. Across the windswept plains of Persia, in the ancient town of Sevilla, stood a tower encrusted with turquoise tiles and filled with strange instruments, mysterious charts, and glowing flasks of potions. Each starry night, the three men climbed to the top of the tower to explore the heavens through narrow stargazing tubes. They then bent over their charts and plotted the positions of the stars they had seen. The people of Sevilla believed them to be magicians. But the Jasper, Melchor, and Balthasar were more than that. They were also healers and holy men. One evening, as the skies darkened, a star like no other star appeared in the west. It filled the sky with brilliant trails of fiery light. "A new planet! A new planet! We discovered it!" shouted Jasper. "No, no," Melchor pointed upwards. "Look at the trails. It can only be a comet." "Comet." Balthasar shook his head and measured its place in the heavens. "It is a mystery. We must consult our charts and scrolls." They spent days searching through scrolls and rolls of scribblings. At last they came across a strange legend telling of a baby whose birth would be announced by a star. The baby was a king who would bring justice and healing and peace to the world. "We must find the child and honor him," said Balthasar. "Let's take him a gift of gold," said Jasper. "If he's a king, he will like gold." "If he's a healer," said Melchor, "he will be pleased with an ointment of myrrh." Balthasar shook his head. "We must give him a gift of holy incense. If he accepts incense, then he is truly a holy man and will be a priest." So they set off across the desert, following the route of merchants to find the child. Each man carried a gift, carefully wrapped in his saddle bay. During day, when scorching winds sent dust devils into the whirling air, they rested in the shadow of their tent, eating dates and drinking dark, bitter chirping tea. By night, they journeyed under a sky that tossed out its milky pattern of stars like a flying carpet, and all the while a brilliant star shimmered and swept across the heavens just ahead of them. At last, the star stood still. Beneath it, they saw a simple shelter. Jasper wanted to be the first to present his gift. He jumped down from his camel and rushed into the shelter. But when he saw who was inside, he forgot about his gift and ran out, wide-eyed with excitement. "He's not a child. He's a young man, like me." "That cannot be," said Melchor, and pushed past him. He entered the shelter, but he too came out quickly. "How strange. He is a middle-aged man, like me." Last of all, it was Balthasar's turn. But when he came out, he shook his head. "You are both wrong. He is old, like me." "He can't be young, middle-aged, and old," said Jasper. "It is a mystery. Let us go in and offer our gifts together," said Balthasar. So Jasper, Melchor, and Balthasar went into the shelter, and they found that they had all been wrong. There before them was a young child with his mother. For a moment, they stood in silence. Then they knelt down and laid their gifts in front of him. The young boy smiled and accepted all three. Then he held out a small sealed box. "This is my gift," he said. Jasper stepped forward and clasped it tightly against his chest. In silence, they climbed onto their camels and journeyed back. But Jasper felt the weight of the unopened gift in his saddle brag. He grew impatient. Finally, he cried, "Let's open it. Let me break the seal." But Balthasar shook his head. "Be patient. Wait until we reach the tower." At long last, they came to a well where merchants from the far corners of the earth had gathered to water their camels. The camels were loaded with spices and silks and brilliant blue beads and rich tapestries. Yet all Jasper, Melkar, and Balthasar carried was the small sealed box. "What is in your box?" one of the merchants asked. "It is a gift," said Jasper proudly. "What kind of gift?" asked the merchant. Jasper held up the box to his ear and shook it gently. "I don't know." "Why don't you have a look?" said the merchant. "Perhaps it's gold." Jasper's fingers rubbed at the seal. "Yes," he said. "Yes, I will open it." And before Balthasar or Melkor could stop him, he broke the wax and lifted the lid. "A stone," he cried. "It's only a stone." "Is that all?" said the merchant. "Is that all?" said the merchant, and he spat into the sand in disgust. Melkar turned to Balthasar. "Why did he give us a stone?" he asked. "It must mean something." "The stone holds a mystery," answered Balthasar. "It's a useless stone," said Jasper cried. "We can't even trade with it." And jumping up, he flung it down into the well. Balthasar watched it fall, but why did he take our gifts and give us only a stone in return? "Ah, now I see," said Balthasar. "What do you see?" asked Jasper, peering down into the darkness of the well. Balthasar's eyes shone. "The child accepted all three of our gifts, that he must be all three things." "What three things?" demanded Jasper. "The true king, the true healer, the true holy one." As Jasper spoke, flames of fire suddenly shot from the well, and a great blaze of light filled the sky. The merchants came running out of the shadows of their tents. "What's happening?" they asked, shielding their eyes from the brilliance. "It is our gift to the from the child," Balthasar announced. "A gift that will bring justice and healing and peace into the world. Our belief in this must be as strong as the stone that burns in us like fire." Wide-eyed, the merchant stared into the brightness. "Come," cried Balthasar, "come and share this. It is a gift for everyone." So one by one, the merchants came forward and held their lamps high to be lit by the fiery light. Then each person carried the flame away, back to all the faraway places of the earth, for all to share.
Thank you.
story of the birth of Jesus is a story we sorely need right now. Jesus gave to the wise man a gift, a stone, hard and cold, like a frozen heart, with fear and despair. Then it exploded with passion for justice and healing and peace. The story we tell each Christmas Eve is a human story about times when the grip of power and control feels insurmountable. But the angels say, "Fear not." But how can we not fear? Bethlehem, that town we name in this story of old, is not a peaceful or just place today. Palestinian Christians are fleeing Bethlehem as they lose more rights and freedom. Not far away, the Israeli government has restricted both food and fresh water to the people of Gaza, who are slowly starving and are deeply sickened by drinking unpure water. Most of the world considers it genocide. Under the strict control of the Romans and the cruel Herod, the military patrolled Palestine during Jesus' life as well. But the story of Jesus' birth and his life offers another possibility. While humans can be compelled to use power to control, we also naturally love and help each other. Most people want peace and to simply be happy and enjoy their lives. But right now, on the verge of a new administration who is calling for censorship and increased violence and persecution, it can seem nearly impossible to have hope that people will turn towards kindness and peace and away from anger, hatred, and revenge. It is hard to imagine that enough people will choose what is best within the human heart and not grasp at our worst instincts. Unitarian minister A. Powell Davies wrote in the mid-20th century, which was also not a great time, "It is interesting to notice that in legend upon legend and story after story, Christmas always begins not with daybreak and the coming of the morning, but at midnight. It was in the darkest hour of the night, not in the glow of the morning, that the shepherds of the legend heard the angels sing. And of course, the three wise men were guided, not by the sun, but by a star." The legends have never drifted out of the darkness into a premature daylight. They have stayed quite close to the inner truth from which they draw their substance, the truth that we must find our faith not in daylight, but in the dark. We must make our songs in the darkness and sing them first at midnight. We must proclaim in the desert a highway when there is no way at all, not even a path or a trail. We must, and evidently we can. Thus ends the words of A. Powell Davies. Fear comes first. The terrible dark, contractions on a moving donkey and nowhere to rest, the power of empire, the power of oligarchy, war, climate change, rising authoritarianism, our personal fears. But the story says, fear not. Legend says a cold stone burst with the passion for justice and healing and peace, and was carried across the world by magi and ordinary people. The Christmas story tells that in every moment, life births itself with possibilities. And we remember this every Christmas Eve. It is a sturdy holiday. We remember the great prophet Jesus, whose words have reminded people across two millennia to love your neighbor as yourself and to turn the other cheek, offering a theological grounding for the nonviolent conflict that inspired Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., and so many others over the years. The people who just kept on during the darkness with fear in their bodies and hearts, just doing the next right thing. When the night is darkest and most painful, the story tells us we can let go of fear. Notice the possibilities in babies, singing angels, those bearing gifts, those offering kindness, those working for peace. We can embrace hope in the darkest of times. We can invite love in, preparing a warm, safe place for hope and possibilities within our hearts. We can notice our spirit stirring, letting it call out to the poor, fearful parts of ourselves. Fear not. We can be magi, bowing to that spark of hope. We can let the hard stone of our despair burst into a passion for a better, kinder world. We will be tried by very difficult times as power tries to control us. People have over and over been tried by such times. But at Christmas we remember that hope shines through for a better world. At Christmas we remember that our hearts and our actions can shine through too. Now I ask the children who each have a basket of stones, two and some adults, to pass around stones for each of you. The stones are to remind you always that a fearful, despairing heart, represented by the stone, can always explode into a healing fire for the world. As you get your stone, just take a moment to meditate on your own heart and what might explode this Christmas Eve and this Christmas day into healing and power for the world.
Angels and shepherds found a hurting family. They were homeless refugees about to go into hiding in a foreign country to save their son's life. They did not know where they would sleep or when they would eat. People in our community here struggle with the same and similar worries. Where will they sleep? What will they eat? Can they get gas for their car? Can they go to the doctor? The CareNet Emergency Fund provides resources to people in our congregation who struggle with hard times as well, and also those outside our walls who need help. So our whole offering this evening is going to be going to the CareNet Emergency Fund. We ask that you please give generously. And our hosts can now come forward to receive our financial gifts. For your offering this evening.
This, then, is the miracle of Christmas, that from one light we kindle many flames. The darkness will flee before the gift of love, that every death is only a beginning. Morning will come, and with it a new birth. One candle has little power for warmth or for light, but one candle is added to another. Together we have the power to light up the world. So now we will kindle our candles. And if you have a coat with you now, you might want to put it on. And we are going to pass the flame, one candle to another, as we sing Silent Night. And this is very important, everybody. I want you to pay attention. All right. When you accept light from somebody else, you must take it this way. If they try to give it to you, wax will flow down your arm and burn you. So we do it this way. Scott and I will begin the lighting at the front, and you will pass it down the rows as we sing Silent Night. If you are at the end of a row, you might need to turn around and light the candles behind you. This is the way we light up the world. We will sing Silent Night in here as we're passing the flame, and then we will head out and down the stairs into the patio, where we will circle around and re-begin Silent Night, so we're all together. And if you are downstairs, I invite you to go down this, out of the doors down there and out onto the patio. So we will begin our lighting of our candles now.